Welcome to the Steering Change Podcast, navigating through the commercial transportation industry in Alberta and beyond, powered by the Alberta Motor Transport Association. Here's your host, Josh Hanaberry.
Friends in the industry, I'm your host, Josh Hanaberry, and I want to welcome you back to another episode of the Steering Change Podcast. Carriers, known as trucking companies, play an integral role in the movement of goods in our provincial, national, and international supply chain. While offering services for their customers, trucking companies carry the responsibility of ensuring their cargo, may it be lumber, electronics, groceries, etc., is picked up on time, but also delivered to their destination safely and in a professional manner. So in a perfect world, providing a premium service for their customers without ever facing any challenges would be simple. But most of us know who operate in the transportation industry that our world is far from perfect, and trucking companies experience a variety of challenges during each trip, each day. Successful trucking companies, those that can navigate through the daily challenges safely with a high level of operational efficiency, are constantly looking ahead and making slight adjustments as needed. They are the ones willing to adapt how they run their business by integrating new technologies, training and mentoring their people, and most importantly, investing resources into their company's safety culture. In today's episode, I'm excited as we speak with Doug Paisley, president with Lethbridge Truck Terminals, and Michelle Spacel, Director of Member Services with AMTA, as we dive into some of the successes and challenges Lethbridge Truck Terminals have experienced over the years, as well as we discuss Doug's journey with the Alberta Motor Transport Association as a member of our executive board and our current chair. Doug, Michelle, super excited. Welcome to the Steering Change Podcast. Glad to have you on today.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah, us too. So Doug, to start us off, can you share a little bit about yourself as well as your role at Lethbridge Truck Terminals, also known as LTT?
Yeah, LTT Logistics. We've been around Lethbridge since 77. Family business for me. My dad bought the company in 1989 when I was 18 and fresh out of high school and plans to go to university and all those things, but may as well come and work for a little while and learn the ropes. And that turned in very quickly to obviously a career and long-term learning and mentoring and growing. And my role here at LTT as the president is I oversee everything. Obviously, I've been in it for a long time and you know what I want to do. And I bought my folks out back in 2013. So it's been about 10 years since I took it over. And it's just a very different feel now than what it was because my dad came out of the big trucking world. He was with H&R Transport for 16 years, started as an owner-operator, went into the office. That's how we ended up in Lethbridge back in 1978. It was time for him to come off the road. My sister and I were quite young, and it was time to be home every night. So he worked in the office there and helped grow H&R from 15 trucks to hundreds of trucks and worked through the process of, I can't imagine what it would be like without cell phones and communications and GPS and knowing where your assets are every night and being able to talk to your people on a drop of a hat. You're relying on, here's 10 cents, call me if you run into a problem. There's a payphone somewhere around. You're relying on a lot of camaraderie in it. The industry was very different back then. The technology was different. I mean, 200 horsepower was a lot of horsepower. Understanding that background and having those conversations and working closely with my dad was a privilege. And like I said, but his mindset when he came into LTT was small and he was kind of done with the big business and he was kind of looking forward to locking the doors and knowing where your assets were in your yard at night and not starting work till you got there the next day was a brand new thing. So, you know, seeing both sides of that, because growing up, there wasn't a weekend visit with friends or a meal out that didn't end with a drive past the yard to check the reefer trailers or check to make sure everything was in order. There wasn't a call that happened because of his position with the company in operations that didn't go through him. If it was 2 a.m. and a problem or those issues, those were a wake-up call for the family because the phone was ringing. So growing up through that, understanding how he was, he didn't want to get out of Alberta. He liked being local. He liked being that guy and building those relationships, doing that. But you get on the roller coaster a little bit. You say yes to a few things and all of a sudden you're bigger and all of a sudden you're growing. But when it got to the point for us, I think it was 2010, branched off and done some things and started an automotive repair shop. And we worked closely together there because back then we had a courier division of about 30 vans. So they were my largest customer. So again, we were still working close together. But in 2008, that fell apart and sold off all the courier vans. In 2010, I came back and I kept the garage for a couple more years, but I came back to LTT and I started pushing to grow, which wasn't for Dean. 68 years old in 2013 and some health issues for my mom, it was time for him to say, let's go. So I took it over and we've grown substantially. I think it was 12 trucks and about 20 trailers back in 2012, 2013. When I bought them out, now we're roughly 55 trucks and 300 trailers, and now I got a big headache every night.
It's amazing. Yeah, lots of Advil, I'm sure. No, that's amazing. I think one of the best things in our industry, honestly, is the people and the journey that you go through, and knowing that it's family-based business, family-owned business, and the growth that I've even witnessed over being heavily invested in our industry for the last, say, decade or so. It is cool to see, and it's nice to hear that side of the story too. So. I appreciate that. I just wanted to also give a quick highlight to your team. I know I met some of them last year at our Professional Truck Driver Championships. I know collectively, your team, they won the 2023 Team Award at our tournament, as well as Aaron Schaaf also won the Ann Taylor Grand Championship Award. So shout out to them. And yeah, just your team. It's good to be able to celebrate those things as well.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Real proud moment for us. It was kind of cool because those were all long-serving guys with us. Every one of those guys that I brought, not all of them were actually drivers anymore, but they'd all been with me for more than 15 years. And they all knew Dean. They all worked with Dean. Dean hired them all originally. So it was kind of cool awesome. For those guys to perform the way they did and make the company proud and do a great job and make themselves proud. So they're looking forward to come back and see if we can give Bison another run for their money. And.
It's amazing. The Truck Driver Championships drops in June, so I know registration's open right away. And yeah, we were chatting offline, so big shout out to Rial over at Bison Transport too on the competition that Doug and Rial are going to have at our conference. We're looking forward to it. All right, Michelle, your turn. How about you share a little bit about yourself as well as your role here at AMTA?
Thanks, Josh. I am the Director of Member Services here at AMTA. I am coming up on almost 10 years working for the organization in a variety of different roles, and I'm really excited to be here today to chat with you, Doug.
Yeah, thanks. Looking forward to it as well, Michelle.
It is awesome to have both Doug and Michelle here. I'm just excited for the conversation and where we're going to go. So, Michelle, take her away.
Thanks, Josh. Yeah, I just want to take a minute to thank you, Doug, for taking the time to chat today. We're super grateful for your commitment to our industry. And I want to kind of start the conversation off with your role as chairman on AMTA's board. Can you walk us through some of the ongoing projects and recent successes the board has seen?
I think without getting too much into the weeds, the growth of the association in the last 3-4 years has been vast. We've gone from more of a regional look to quite a national look. And I think we've truly become the resource for government with, you know, our lobbying efforts and with our knowledge and with our experience and expertise, their watchdog, if you will, and certainly a confidant when it comes to decision-making for road safety and transportation decision-making. The safety campus that we've been working on for the last number of years, it's still up in the air. We're still working through the process with government, but the fit is perfect from on-road safety and policing and public safety. I think it's a natural relationship that'll continue to blossom. And the narrative, whether it was the current government or previous governments, for what needs to be done going forward from now and into the future, the safety campus and innovation campus makes a lot of sense. Our government relations have never been stronger. I don't think we've ever been this close, like I said, on a texting basis to say, hey, we need some input here. An email basis to, you know, can you guys make room? We're going to be speaking at, and we'd like your support. And both from our standpoint, when we're looking for information or we need support on our end, it is truly a two-way street that probably has blossomed over the last 3-4 years in a very good way.
Yeah, I would agree. We have our annual leadership conference coming up next week, and I am super excited for the government representation that is taking the time to come and join us. And we all have that common goal of trying to make our Alberta highway safer, and they are in agreement with that, as well as our members and our board. In your opinion, Doug, who should be involved with AMTA and the various initiatives that we're leading?
You know, for me, I mean, AMTA is very near and dear to my heart. The association impact for myself and my business, and obviously longevity with the involvement for my dad for as many years. I honestly believe that anybody who is licensed commercially or registered in the province of Alberta should be a member of the AMTA. That's my feeling. That's my personal opinion, because it would provide that oversight that's required. Then you've got that internal pressure to be safe, to act like a professional, to be professional, to do things the right way. And there's accountability with an association that's going to be able to oversee and audit and ensure that these companies are doing things the right way, because things fall in through the cracks and there's loopholes that can be done. Government's too big and too busy. So from us with specific expertise in certain areas, we're going to see things and hear things that from a self-regulated aspect, you don't need full self-regulation, but the accountability piece, if everybody had to be part of our association, and if they were a poor operator or a weak safety record or consistent levels of unsafe practices, well, then we kick them out. We don't want you on our roads. We don't want you as part of the association. And a note goes to Alberta Registries or Transportation to say, this is a problem. And maybe these guys' wings need to be clipped until they get their act together.
Yeah, I would agree. I think a lot of where our lack of knowledge and understanding is that people sometimes don't recognize what we could do for them as an organization and how we can bring value, how we can bring that expertise and support to their businesses to allow them to be better at what they're doing on our public roadways.
Well, and I can give you a great example. I saw this morning when I was leaving my house, there was a person in a minivan doing courier work. That minivan was loaded to the max with packages and they're out distributing. I doubt very much that that minivan was made to be a commercial vehicle. I doubt very much there was overload shocks to handle extra weight. I doubt the tires were pressured up properly to handle the extra weight. I don't think there was mirrors that were good enough to be able to see what he needed to do, or sensors within the vehicle front and back, because there's no way visibility was possible, too impaired. So for that person out there earning their living, doing a job, I don't even think they know what they don't know. And for them to have to be part of the commercial association for transportation and go, oh, geez, I didn't realize I have to have these safety courses. I didn't know I had to put heavier duty shocks on my vehicle because my suspension isn't made for it. Well, again, for these guys running around the road doing highway speeds or in-town speeds, they're actually a problem waiting to happen. It's an accident waiting to happen. And that's scary because our kids and our parents are walking around on these roadways and they don't even know that they're actually in worse shape safety-wise than they should be. And I just think from that standpoint, if they knew how impactful being part of an association like this could be, and the in education available and the knowledge, and if they get really involved, the collaboration and the relationships they can build, it just makes you a better carrier.
And that's one of the key reasons why we started this podcast, to be honest, is to hit those. We have an internal saying, the accidental carriers, the ones that are completely unaware, to try to hit that demographic of those that may not know who AMTA is and what we can do to support them through their journey. So, no, I completely agree.
I think that's, for me, even in my experience in this role, talking to so many accidental carriers, even carriers that they know, yes, I own a commercial vehicle. I own a tractor that's registered for 46,500 kilograms, but the amount of information they're just not aware of because they just haven't had the time to research it, or they had no idea they're even supposed to research it, to coming to us and we can be that limb of support. And oftentimes it's just a quick question, quick answer, and we're good to go versus, oh, I didn't know. Then all of a sudden it leads to something detrimental. So, but yeah, I think the courier situation is, just knowing that e-commerce has exploded over the last number of years, we're seeing it more and more and more. And you're just like, man, have you even like, are you trained to drive? Like, can you even see out of that thing? And then, yeah, talking about the mechanics of the vehicles in their conversation, but I appreciate that. So Doug, let's pivot a little bit to your company specifically, knowing that you have grown in size, but also the regions that you're serving. Can you share your perspective on the importance to ensure that your staff does make it home safely after each trip?
You know, I think the biggest thing is the experience of our group. Like I said, we've got some long-serving guys, and that's where the education really comes from, is the mentorship within your group. So we bring in a new person in. They may have experience for years from somewhere else, but we orientate them on the way we do things on the safety side, and we do things the right way. We don't cheat. We work within the hours of service. We don't expect guys to work outside that when they're unfit to drive. The safety operations and how we maintain our equipment. Our trucks, for the most part, are all late model, newer. I mean, I run Volvo platform because it works for me. I like the fact that they're one of the safer vehicles on the road from the standpoint of testing. Volvo's ahead of the curve for the most part with driver ergonomics and the seat positioning and driver-friendly controls to make their life better. They've thought about how the sleeper berth is because they understand these are these guys' homes for whatever days per week in the truck. And if there is an ever an unfortunate situation like a head-on collision, I know that that truck platform, not that I'm endorsing, maybe I should get paid, but not that I'm trying to endorse, but I know that that truck ends up being collapsed to the point where it saves the driver's life. And I've seen the videos of it. We've all had a look at that in comparison to some of the other ones. But from my standpoint, making sure the guys get home early is empowering them to make good decisions. And that's the biggest thing for us. And welcoming the questions, no such thing as a dumb question. And, you know, have the contact list of each guy and make sure that they're ready to go and feel comfortable sharing that this is new for me, but having the technology at their fingertips that, yeah, I've never been into Regina. I've never been into California. I've never gone to Detroit before, but they've got all the equipment that they need. And we've done all the research up front and knowing that they're still going to run into issues, but they can, you know, with a quick phone call, text, reach out on their tablet in the truck, they have the ability to communicate and get the answers they need to be safe and do the right job.
It's amazing. Yeah, I love the depth that you went into first with the Volvo. Paying attention to the vehicles that your fleet's running, I think, is critical. And understanding that it's a team effort, too. So doing the legwork on your trips ahead of time, so that way when something happens, because we know we don't live in a perfect world. We know that no trip is absolutely perfect, where everything is just, oh, that was amazing. We know that's not our industry. So knowing that you can rely on your team is also important. So I wanted to hit on that, too. How do you mentor your people to mentor others when they're in the field or dealing even in your warehousing and stuff like that? How do you navigate that space?
Yeah, I think our depth is strong that way. We're very fortunate. We've got lots of long-serving employees with us, so they get it. They've got depth in multiple areas. I've got warehouse guys that can jump in the truck, that can run if need be, and if we're short people to help out, they step up and work together. I think it's important that our dispatch team understands the strengths and weaknesses of the individuals they're working with. I mean, they vent. I hear them bellyache about certain guys, whatever. But at the end of the day, we know what we're dealing with. It's our job to manage people. That's why it's in the title. Dispatching and planning is about people management. And if you're going to set up a guy for failure that you know doesn't have the skills or ability to do certain things, but you're short and you needed him to go, then be prepared to hold his hand or her hand. And we've got drivers that I can give them their paperwork and say, see you in a week when you get back from California. And you don't hear from them. They just take care of everything. They phone their customer. They take it on themselves. And everything's handled. And you don't know that this was late or this fell apart or they talked to this guy or that guy. It's just dealt with. But you've got other staff that don't have that capacity. And you might need to only give them so much information at a time. But again, to me, that's good people management. And at the end of the day, when I get people coming in, I do pay you to manage that. So if you're upset because this person failed, well, you set him up for fail because you know he couldn't do that role. You knew that he was going to have struggles because we were short. Be prepared to deal with it. Be upfront. Be on top of those things. And again, the best laid plans on a daily basis fall apart. But my poor dispatch and planners, man, it seems like they reinvent the wheel every 4 hours.
Totally agreed. It's funny when you're talking about your dispatchers, and it reminds me of my time. I had a short stint of being a dispatcher before I got demoted into safety. It's actually how I got into safety is I couldn't handle the sales guys yelling at me and my drivers freaking out on customer sites and trying to, which way is up, which way is down? So they have my empathy for sure. And it's nice though that you have the team that, hey, you need some support, we got you. You can run with this and go. Like, I love the diversity in our industry too. And it's nice being able to lean on the pros, those that you just know, like, oh, Jim and Kelly, they have it. Their teams are running great, carry on. And then, okay, you need a little more support. So
you talk about the diversity, Josh, and that's a big thing right now. There's people that are second and third language English. So you may have to accommodate with translators on your phone. I mean, I'm meeting with a fellow on Thursday that's got a Ukrainian transplant that doesn't speak English, but he can do it with the translator on his iPhone. Well, we may have to just to figure out how that works, but it is what it is.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So true. Yeah, I think it's really important that we're empathetic to people in our industry. No one was necessarily born exactly how we want them to be, the perfect exposition. But yeah, being empathetic to just real life, real world. It's a global economy and people are coming to Canada and it's nice just to know that you're willing to accommodate that because I don't hear that very often and I spend a lot of time with industry. So I'm glad you hit that too, Doug. That's awesome. What would you say from a challenges perspective, some of the, I would say, hardest challenges that you've had to navigate over the last little while, pandemic aside, understanding that, yes, we just, thankfully, we don't have to deal with that. Were there any challenges from the equipment side or maybe customer related that you could talk us through, as well as sharing some guidance on how you and your team were able to overcome them?
You know what, we were okay on the procurement side. We were fairly well prepared, not that we saw anything coming out of the ordinary with regards to pandemic, but that didn't impact us really at all. We came to work every day. We and our trucks operated and we had enough trailers. So we were okay that way. We weren't on a CapEx spend that was scheduled that we couldn't get enough trailers to do what we did. Like I said, we were fairly well set up for that. Our biggest challenge was driver shortage, and some of it was actually the comparison of others that were working from home and the frustration levels of, well, they get to do it. Well, our world does not work from home. I need my dispatchers in-house. Could they answer some calls? Can they do some things? Can they take their laptop home? Of course, but not long-term. We need people here at the front, and it's going to be face-to-face. Our interactions are here. The phone rings here, you know. So from our standpoint, driver shortage was challenging, and we aged out. We lost some people due to attrition just because we have an aging workforce, which has been probably, I would say, the driver shortage for us has been the realistic biggest challenge in getting young people in. And I'll even deep dive on that a little bit. The entry to becoming a Class 1 driver now with the MELT training, yes, there's subsidy, but not for everyone. You know, at one time, you had to be unemployed to be able to qualify for the $10,000 subsidy. Now, they've changed those requirements and whatnot, but the first one that came out was driving back to work. Again, there's a reason they're out of work. And when they come in and they think that this is going to be an easy job, just like driving my pickup, it's not, you know, or even the standpoint of what is legal to do on your own time, whether your recreation includes cannabis use or alcohol consumption. Really, you can't do that if you're going to be a professional truck driver. But the biggest crux is what I just said there. The federal government doesn't recognize truck driving as a profession in the National Occupational Standard, which to me is the biggest deficiency that we battle every day as an association, as a company, to attract young people to our trade, so to speak. Yes, there's student advisors saying there's lots of room in transportation, supply chain. We're looking for people. But then they realize, well, I have to take a $10,000 course. Okay, it's subsidized. Okay. Oh, whoa, I have to change my lifestyle. I can't go smoke weed and drink beers with my buddies on the weekend because I'm actually deemed impaired when I show up to work on Monday. You know what? That's too much for me. I don't want that. So it's a very unique individual that's going to come in and want to be in a truck. Now, I've got local, I've got warehouses, I've got dispatch, but we've got regional guys that are in the truck a couple nights a week, and we've got long haul guys that are in their truck probably five nights a week. It's not for everybody. And I would say the long haul guys are the toughest ones because those are the ones that are aging out because people just don't want it. And it doesn't pay enough for the situation of being away from home for 5 days. Realistically, you can't go to your kids' banquet. You can't go to your kids' recital. You're missing out on a lot of things to do this job. When I look at it, they're really at the controls of a 500 and whatever horsepower, 1,850-foot, 1,000-pound missile operating down the highway at 100 kilometers an hour. You're telling me this guy's not a pro? You've got to be kidding me. This guy doesn't have a trade certification or professional designation, and he literally saved the world through the pandemic and made sure Costco had toilet paper? Come on. So there's some deficiencies that we are working hard. You guys, I know how hard our association is working to get that level of credibility and recognition for our people in our industry because they deserve it. And they are pros. There's no question. But we need to work hard to get that. So when I look at the hardest challenges we have is getting new people into it that understand how essential they are, because not only are they an essential service provider, they might be the essential service provider.
Yep.
So I like I said, as I speak it, it gives me chills because I'm so proud of our organization. I'm so proud of what we do and what our people do. Literally, we feed the world. 100%. You know, without us, the grocery stores would be empty in a week.
Yes, completely agreed. Yeah, it's interesting what you're talking about too, between like young drivers coming in and then knowing that from the long haul side, that was an older generation that took a lot of pride in doing that, where I know, like, I'm a millennial, and speaking for myself, the thought of being away from my family, sometimes weeks, if not months on end, because that's just how the load board works. So that's how your dispatch plan ends up working. I couldn't imagine, like, there's no way. So yeah, it is a real challenge for sure. How do you find, when you're looking at your fleet, the age differences? Do you have a good blend between, like, the younger, whatever you want to classify as younger, up to, like, more of the olders, and they're going to be retiring in the next couple of years?
Our average age is about 55, 60 years old. Our long haul guys, for the most part, are over 60. Some of them over 70. My oldest guy is 82. Wow,
amazing.
You know, and he works for choice. He's picky. He's funny. He said, "I'll only run two trips to Calgary a day. I'm not going past Calgary. If you make me do that, I'll quit." You can run as many loads to Calgary twice a day, 7 days a week if you want, within the hours of service regulations. You know, and he's just funny, and he's 84 years old, and he's just a good guy, and he wants to work, and you know what, he works 5 days a week and runs Calgary twice if they're available, and he doesn't really care if they're in the morning or in the evening, whatever. He's pretty easy going, pretty laid back. But he's going to draw his line in the sand that if you send me past Calgary, that's not going to work. I got lots of Calgary for him. But for the most part, the older guys are pros. They don't need a lot of maintenance and management. They just do their thing, and they come and go, and you see them on a weekly basis, and they usually got a smile on their face. They don't mind taking a guy under their wing, and they don't mind sharing their knowledge and information. And that's what's interesting. I don't think we've been sophisticated enough to build the book where you've been to ABC warehouse for produce out of Northern California, and you know how to get in, you know how to get out, you know what the protocols and schedules are. Can you document that for us? So when we send the new guy there, he actually has a little bit of a chance to be successful, and he knows who to call, when to call, how to get off. Because these guys, they get offloaded early. They show up late with no problems. And I mean, my young guys go there and they can't get in early. And if they're late 5 minutes, we get a fine and they're yelled at and pushed to the back of the line. My old guys just get no issues. So it's funny when you talk about just the depth of these guys and when they retire, oh, I miss them so much.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think that touches on that driver shortage and the outgoing retired pros and how we have to really set that mentorship up for the incoming and showcase the professionalism of a class one truck driver to the world. Because what you touched on earlier around them being essential, it's no joke. And we do have an aging workforce. And that's one thing that AMTA takes a lot of pride in, trying to work with government and partners and stakeholders, is how we're going to professionalize it, how we're going to step it up a notch to showcase exactly who they are and what they've been doing for years, and just give them the title they've earned and deserve. Seeing as our industry's been required to rely on a lot of different technologies, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, in operations to assist with the compliance and efficiencies, in your opinion, how has technology benefited your organization?
You know, for us, it gives us the ability to be more efficient, make more informed decisions, and be a lot more proactive and less reactive. The communication is key, or the ability to reach out through cell phone. A lot of the times we're working through the tablets now in the trucks, because you've got the electronic logging devices or the GPS units all in one. Being able to quickly send a message of 411 or 911. And our guys know that if they've got a 911 come up on the screen, it means pull over as soon as it's safely possible, because we need to talk to you. Or if it's 411, as soon as it works, no panic. We've got some information that's changed on your load or whatnot. So I think the truck technology, the adaptive driving, you know, having some of these old guys, I'm not driving an automatic. I don't want it. Keep me in my lane. They'll make a trip and come back and go, I'm not driving a standard again. That auto shift is really good. Once they get it figured out and the technology to understand how a driver operates and when that transmission is going to shift, or the recollection it has for driving hills, when it knows to downshift, I think there's a lot of artificial intelligence that is actually making good headway and actually saving some wear. I mean, I don't think people fully understand what it's like to have an hours of service logbook telling you when your hours of service are available. It's kind of taking the controls out of the hands of a driver that knows when he feels good, knows when he wants to shut down. Well, I got a dispatcher saying, I got hours on your logbook so you can go. Can you get there? Well, yeah, I can, but man, I'm tired. Well, you still have to fall back on, are you fit to drive or not? So it's a bit of a risky or a slippery slope And driving, like, oh, driving's easy. Anybody can drive. Do it under stress with $1 million payload, $500,000 worth of equipment, and pressure to get there at a certain timeline, or there's a penalty or a fine, and do it every day within the hours of service in Canada. That's a big ask. I mean, my daughter's a nurse. She works 12 hours a day. My other daughter, who's an accountant, goes, how could you work 12 hours? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's hilarious because they work 8. And a lot of the people that, oh, if you work in other sectors, well, I mean, I get paid for 8, but I'm only expected to put in 6.7. 6.7 hours, 5 days. Geez, what do you want me to do after Wednesday? Like, come on. You know,
that's that professionalism, right? Well,
the mindset of the requirement for the truck driver. I mean, hey, we got in-town guys. We got warehouse guys that do their 8s. I've got technicians on staff that work in 8s. We've got, you know, our office administrators that work in 8s. But the truck drivers, they bust their ass.
Yeah. Do you have an example of where technology's become a burden instead of helping?
I probably refer back to the electronic logging device mandate, because it does take the control out of a professional driver, where the guy is not fit to drive, but there's hours on his logbook, or he feels great and I can make another mile here. I can get to Hope and then I've got a good night's rest, or I can get a hotel, but my ELD says I'm out of hours. So I got to shut her down now. And now I'm on the side of the road. It's not the ideal. And to me, that's somewhat problematic, where it doesn't understand that the human element of driving, you know, I feel good. I'm fit to drive. I'm alert. I'm aware. I feel great. And I got 2 hours to destination. I can be there early. And my good buddy Josh is going to unload me tonight. I can get a good meal. I can get a hotel. And I'm up in the morning. I'll get my reload. And I'm back a day early. And I'm going to make my daughter's figure skating year-end review on Saturday. It messes with their lives.
Yeah. I'm going to shift a little bit. So being in business for a long time, you know a thing or two about building a strong reputation in our industry. Having a strong reputation isn't only a must to maintain and grow your customer base, but also to recruit and retain staff. Can you share some of your absolutes when building and maintaining a strong reputation?
For us, we've always kind of had that mindset to say yes or figure it out. Mm-hmm. That was generational with Dean. I mean, he never left anybody hanging. So if somebody called and we didn't have the answer, we couldn't do it. We'd find a solution or help find a solution, or at least push them in a direction where they could go. I think the buzzwords, obviously, honesty and integrity and doing things and treating people the right way. I mean, it is as cliche as it comes. It's golden rule. Do unto others, right? So when it comes down to how we treat our people, how we treat our customers, how we treat each other, I look at my own current database of 55 drivers and probably 10, roughly 10 admin staff-ish. So roughly out of 65 employees, we probably have 10 current drivers that have worked here on more than one occasion. Maybe Dean got them their start, or they learned how to drive here and then they moved on to bigger and better. And then that wasn't the greatest and end all. They wanted to come back and work again. I think our record is 5 times. I had one of our guys. He worked here 5 times, because you never really leave on bad terms. You go do your thing. You come back and maybe the grass wasn't as green as you thought it would be. Or maybe you realize you still had to mow and water it. And maybe it wasn't bad being at LTT. So I've never said never. I mean, I don't think I'd bring the guy back that worked for us 5 times, but I might. You never know.
Shortage.
Yeah, you never know. He left on his terms. And like I said, but it is interesting when I look at the list of 50 plus drivers, and not quite 20%, but close, have been with us on more than one occasion, some of them 3 or 4.
And well, I think that speaks to your culture. Obviously, you're doing something right when it comes to building the relationships, building that trust with your employees.
For me, it's so simple, right? I mean, the end of the day, the contract you signed to work here, show up to work with a decent attitude and give me what you got, and I'll pay you. That's our deal. It's that cut and dry. I mean, the federal mandate with paid sick days, we're not going to go down that path, but it gets me fired up. I mean, that's not the way I was raised. Yeah. You want to get paid, you show up and work. You want to make more money? I mean, I watched my dad march guys out of his office coming in looking for advances. I literally laugh. I can still hear it in my ears. Well, Doug had work for this weekend for you and you turned it down. Clearly you weren't that hungry. No advance. Next time say yes to the work, because that's the way it is. You want to make more money, work more.
Yep. I like it.
So true. That's awesome. And just this whole conversation, it's nice to see the passion and the knowledge and the expertise, Doug, that you definitely bring. But also, Michelle, it's nice to see, just being so invested in your industry for almost a decade now, just your perspective as well. So before we do end, and we always give the opportunity, Doug, for our guests to kind of give some final words. So if there were any final words that you would like to share, now is the time.
For me, if I was to throw a shameless plug in for the AMTA, You know, I look at guys tell me that, membership, what's in it for me? What am I getting out of it? It's too expensive. It's less than the cost of a tire for your truck. And you're going to get something of it, whether it's a regional meeting, whether it's a fundraising opportunity, whether it's rubbing elbows with somebody that phones you down the road and says, I met you at one of the deals and you're in Lethbridge and I got a problem. I mean, for years, like you talk about our reputation, when I have a problem, and we have problems too, breaks, guys make mistakes, things happen in our industry. We're in harm's way a lot. There's a ton of risk. But for us, we're owed so many favors because we've been that rescue for so many guys that'll phone us at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night going, we got a problem and we're in Lethbridge or we're an hour away from Lethbridge. Yeah, what do you need? We can help you. And we just rally the troops and go and help. So when you're done that, send us a bill, be fair, done. Well, I've had problems in Saskatchewan. I've had problems in Manitoba. I've had problems. And if you don't think I haven't reached out to the resources from the collaborations and friendships I've made through the association and said, I'm in a pickle and I need help. They don't always have the ability to help you, but they always have the ability to get you directionally going in the right place. And to me, that's worth its weight in gold. So, you know, a $600 or $800 membership or, you know, signing up to be on compliance and regulatory affairs or injury reduction and training, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, it's exciting to see how impactful we can be as an industry together. It's a small world. It really is. But when you need that relationship that you've formed, and when you are in a pickle and you do want that support, they'll never say no, right?
Nope.
It's just how the world is in transportation.
Well, it's where our industry is.
Yeah.
And especially because, like I said, I got so many omies out there. When you phone back and you call in a favor, they can't say no.
They can't say no.
They can't. Yeah, exactly. Oh, crap. It's long weekend. Really? Yeah, I got Saturday night and the wheels fell off and I need a hand. All right. We'll help you. Then the next phone call is, how could you charge me that much? Man, that was rude. I can't wait till your crap breaks down and I get to return the favor.
It's awesome.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, and I think it is really true. And you just never know when you do need that person. And we tried really hard to encourage just the relationship opportunity. And it does go a long way. But yeah, I do appreciate you joining us today, Doug. And just the guidance information and, of course, the support from the board. And it's been awesome. Michelle, my friend. Bring us home. Anything that you would like to share before we end?
Well, Doug did a shameless plug, so I will too. I'm going to throw out June 1st, 2024 is our Professional Truck Driver Championship that's happening at our Edmonton office. And I want to challenge drivers to come out and try to beat LTT at their reign. Everything will be open for registration early April, so just stay tuned to our website. We could even possibly get the registration links in the show notes of this episode. It's a great event that just showcases what it takes to be a professional Class 1 truck driver and the dedication that those drivers have to the craft that they do every single day is something that the general public probably doesn't think about a lot when they're passing them on the highway or when they are just seeing them. But it's amazing. It's amazing the craft that they get to do and they get to showcase that. And they take a lot of pride in it. And it is a competition and it's super exciting. So that is kind of my last thoughts, Josh.
Awesome. Appreciate it. And as I said a couple of times, I do appreciate our time together, our conversation. Part of my personal and I guess investment into our industry is like the family based stuff. So hearing more about your journey, your dad's journey, and just going from kind of one direction to another to see where it is today. I honestly think it's amazing. And I think from our listeners' perspective too, it's really nice to hear what's possible because I think far too often conversations are a little too doom and gloom. So when you can hear about the successes and, well, I've tried this and we're challenged with this and this is how we're overcoming it, I think that was really important guidance. So I do appreciate that. I also appreciate the fact that we got to talk about relationships with our people and mentoring and leaning on each other, but of course, relationships with us at the association and our friends at government. So just really appreciate both of your time. I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thanks so much.
Josh.
Take care.
You too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of AMTA's Steering Change Podcast. The views expressed by guests of the Steering Change Podcast are their own and may not reflect the views of AMTA, its hosts, or sponsors. Do you have a question that you would like answered on an upcoming episode of the Steering Change Podcast? We want to hear from you. To submit a question to the Steering Change mailbag, hit up our DMs on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram with the hashtag Steering Change, and your question will be answered either live on the podcast or by one of our SMEs here at AMTA. We ask that you share this episode with those in your network that could benefit from what we discussed today, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you can be notified when future episodes are released. You can learn more about us and our mission by visiting www.amta.ca. Now get out there and have a safe day.